Thanks for listening to the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Welcome to Thursday's podcast. I'll tell you why. Last night was a huge win for analytics after the Dodgers blew it in Game 5 at home. Plus, Super Bowl champion Ben Watson joins the show to tell me about his time with the Patriots and what's next. Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. The Doug Gottlieb Show is brought to you by Discover Card. We treat you like you'd treat you. Baseball. I love you. I love you. I love you. I really do. And I told you earlier this week that I don't hate to say I told you so. Nobody really hates to say I told you so. Right? On the Browns, hiring an unproven coach to coach a team full of personalities, an undersized, marginally athletic, by NFL quarterback standards, quarterback, in a franchise that has no culture of winning, hiring a completely unproven former running backs coach to be your head coach in a year where you have such huge expectations, having this type of slow, disappointing, dysfunctional start, I don't hate to say it, I told you so! But you can't do the I told you so, you can't do the right, you can't do the who told you, this guy, unless you're willing to do this. Sometimes we're wrong. And last year, I told you how many times during the playoffs it was a bad night for analytics. Well, with two thumbs pointed in this way, I can tell you that I have been wrong. That analytics, while not the sole answer to every one of our problems, do in fact give us percentage chances of things playing out. They give us a great statistical baseline to begin any sort of decision. And last night, Los Doyers, the Dodgers to the rest of the world, the, by anyone's estimation, best team in Major League Baseball, a team who had been to the last two World Series, they were eliminated at home at Chavez Ravine by the Washington Nationals, a team that has traditionally, and again, they haven't been around long enough to be a tradition, but traditionally underachieved in the playoffs. Now, we can sit here and argue whether or not it should be a 7-game series. But the fact is, you had a 3-1 lead at home entering the 8th inning in your park. You had more comeback wins than anybody in baseball. You played in the last two World Series. So it's not like your players, your pitchers, your closer hasn't pitched in high leverage situations in the past. You get out of the 7th inning with a Clayton Kershaw strikeout on just 4 pitches. And Kershaw gives up back-to-back home runs on just 2 pitches. On just 2 pitches. One, which felt like a good pitch out of the strike zone, but it was at the shoe tops of a guy who's having a great year for the Nationals. And the other one was Juan Soto, who it was lefty-lefty matchup. But, man, that was a breaking ball that did not break, and that's a ball that has not landed yet. What's the line from the movie? Any ball that travels that far needs a stewardess on it? Holy hell, he hit that one a mile. You go back and watch, and we'll tweet out Juan Solo hitting that that slider that did not move from Clayton Kershaw, and I showed it to my son. That is how you hit a baseball. But last night was a win for analytics and a loss for all of those go by feel, go by history of a guy, go by name. You got the numbers right in front of you, bro. Here's Dave Roberts, for now manager of the Dodgers, on what happened with Kershaw in relief last night.
He's a pro, you know. probably the best pitcher of our generation. And for him to make himself available tonight and got us out of a big spot right there. And, you know, it just didn't work out. You know, there's always going to be second guessing when things don't work out. But, you know, I'll take my chances any day on Clayton. And it just didn't work out right there. It's not about analytics. It's about he's one of the best pitchers in the game. And for him to go out there and throw four pitches and to go back out there and get two hitters, I felt really good about that. So, you know, it's more of, I don't think it was an analytic question. You know, it's a guy that I believe in, I trust, and it didn't work out.
He's not one of the best pitchers in baseball anymore. He's your third best starter. He's a starter, not a reliever. That's not what he does. And you're going by what he's done over the past 10 years, not what he's done in these situations in the past or these situations this year. And oh yeah, by the way, making yourself available is great. Clayton Kershaw has been great, is a great teammate. He's actually better in the postseason than people will give him credit. He's had some moments where he's shown the ability to nut up and be incredibly clutch. But Dave Roberts not admitting it was a mistake. Come on. Here's Dave Martinez.
He's still a great pitcher and very competitive. His velo isn't what it used to be, but he knows how to pitch. And that's why he's so successful.
Not what it used to be. The opposing manager's like, hey, his velo is not what it used to be. That's the difference. What's the difference in a slider at 92 as opposed to at 89? There you go. At 92, it saws off your bat or you swing and you miss. At 89, it ends up in the parking lot. They always say sports is a game of inches, miles an hour. It's that much. It's that much difference. Like, there's a reason that people are like, why are you starting him in game two? He's not your second best starter. Ryu is. And you had this as numbers. Adam Kolarik against Juan Soto. Soto was 0-for-3 with two strikeouts in games 1-3. Couldn't hit the guy. Couldn't see it. But they left Kershaw in after he gave up a home run. Then you have Joe Kelly in, who gets you out of that inning, and you're like, all right, Joe Kelly, who's had a very, very shaky year. Then they go to the ninth, and you're like, yeah, let's let Joe Kelly load the bases. And then Joe Kelly throws a meatball to Howie Kendrick. Another one. That was a straightaway center. Holy crap, Howie got all of that one. And they never even had a mound visit. You load the bases with nobody out in the top of the ninth inning in a tie game, and you don't even go out there and go like, you all right, man? No, I'm not all right. My nuts are in my neck right now. Help. Get somebody up. Or, no, I got this. Just needed a breath. Like, Dave Roberts didn't move. Do I move? Do I do something? Do I? And I don't know if analytics tell you to not get up out of the dugout, but hell, I think he was just in shock. But the idea that Dave Roberts at this moment, it's not about analytics. We know, Dave. But your team is completely built on analytics. The reason you had guys platooning last year was analytics. The reason they went and hired a guy from Tampa to be your general manager is because they used analytics to save money. You just do it on a bigger scale there. And now on the biggest stage, you're going to go like, yeah, I know there's analytics to say I should bring Kolarik in. Just going to go with my gut. You know, I may have lost back-to-back in the World Series. And I know that Kershaw, you know, wasn't great coming out of the pen, even the World Series. But damn it, he's a great pitcher. He'll figure it out. Nope. Juan Soto hit the ball so hard, I thought he might have hurt the bat. Like, the poor bat's like, man, that was too hard. And Joe Kelly's ninth inning started with a walk. The game-changing, season-ending, series-deciding rally. Always, not sometimes, always starts with a walk. Always. Inning always started with a walk. It's like every breakup starts with someone saying, we need to talk. Right? Not good. Every disgusting, disrespectful thing that somebody says in front of a crowd always starts with the, hey, no disrespect. Something disrespectful is coming afterwards. Right? And every, not some, not kinda, not maybe, every extra innings, every ninth inning, every comeback choke job you have ever seen in Major League Baseball starts with a, you know, he walked the opening hitter, right? And Dave Roberts didn't move. Maybe he was like the rest of us. Did he just walk the opening hitter? Why? Maybe it was a, why do I have Joe Kelly in there? Because he went with feel instead of all of the data that idiots like me have said, like, oh, the data. But look, listen, the data is why they put on the shift, and the shift really works. That's why they keep putting on the shift. And guys fight against the data like, nah, that doesn't work. Yes, it does. That's why they do it. And then you see like a screaming line drive hit to short right center, and there's the second baseman sitting out there going, yep, that's what it said in the book. That's why computers are smarter than us. They just, I hate to say this. No, I don't. The computers are smarter than us. Yeah, we created computers, but they can, their ability to have, to formulate mathematical equations and solve them in short order are things that human beings can't do. Right? I just can't. Predictive analysis gives you percentage chances of something coming true or becoming false. And the predictive analysis told us what the right moves to do. And Dave Roberts goes, nah, I'm going to go with my gut because I'm a baseball guy. And they are home today. And though I like Dave Roberts and think he's a mensch and he's a pretty good skipper, that was a really, really, really bad two innings. And I'm not even a huge analytics guy. They have a place. You know what that place is? The eighth and ninth inning of a series. I mean, all the rest of these guys, they keep going out. Like, why do they keep going out there? And I get it. You know, if it becomes a turnstile, it's like surgery, you know. Every time you go in, you run the risk of infection or making things worse. It's the same thing with the bullpen, right? You go by the numbers, and sometimes the guy just doesn't have it that night. I get it. Doesn't live up to the numbers. But it's not like Kershaw's been great out of the pen in the past. It's not like you didn't have numbers or didn't have an answer to the equation. Kolarik was there for one reason and one reason only, and he's out there going like, oh, never mind. Oh, yo. Maybe Kolarik's sitting out there going, I don't hate to say I told you so, but that wouldn't happen to me. Damn, Juan Soto got into that baseball. And we never lead with baseball, but watching that train wreck happen, I didn't really feel bad for Dodger fans because they're a-holes anyway, right? They just are. They're so good, and their uniforms are so clean. Their stadium's so nice. They've been to two straight World Series. Like, we underachieved. Like, dude, you went to the World Series twice in a row. You have all these great players and great history, and you had Vin Scully. Yeah, we don't, like, Angel, we don't like you guys anyway. Like, good, you can have a little of despair. But, man, that hurts baseball because it's becoming like Kobe and LeBron. Right? We're supposed to have Kobe and LeBron in the NBA Finals. We're supposed to have the Dodgers and the Yankees just once since Reggie Jackson hit three out in a game. Could I see Dodgers, Yankees, and now we don't? Why? Because Dave Roberts, he's a go-with-his-gut guy. You know what Dave Roberts reminds me of? My daughter. My daughter's 13 years old. She failed her most recent math test. It was an open book test. Open note test, excuse me. So the teacher emails me and says, just so you know, Grace did poorly on her test, but she tried to do it with no notes. So I go to Grace, what are you doing? Like, then you don't have the notes? I have the notes. I didn't bring them. Why? I don't need them. I got it all up here. Apparently not. Apparently not. Secondly, when a teacher says open note, they want for you to pay attention in class, so you take down notes. And two, they want you to get an A. They're like gifting you an A. And you're like, nah, I'd rather get a C and do it my way. Well, congratulations. Now you got to retake the test. You're still the best you can get is a C. But you proved your point. You can do the test without notes. Dave Roberts. Dave Roberts is anti-vax guy, right? Can you survive without the smallpox vaccine? You can. Most people will not contract smallpox. But there's that chance. Right? Clayton Kershaw, can he get lefties out? Sure. Unless he doesn't. What we're seeing tonight in the NFL. This is a good. I'm so fired up about this next segment. What we're seeing tonight in the NFL is a lot like the TV show Friends. Share with you next on the Doug Gottlieb Show.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. So, can I tell you my challenges as a human being? Yeah, good. I can. You know why? It's Doug Gottlieb Show. So, yesterday was Yom Kippur. Do you guys know what Yom Kippur is? Week before is Rosh Hashanah. That's the Jewish New Year. I don't usually take it off. We kind of celebrate at home. We're kind of a split, sort of faintly religious household, right? Like, my wife grew up Southern Baptist. I grew up Reformed Jew. I did have a bar mitzvah. None of my daughters were not bat mitzvahed as of yet. We'll go to Israel in a couple years. They'll probably do it that way instead of the huge show way, whatever. I have a daughter that does go to a Jewish day school. She actually knows and can speak Hebrew, but is the least religious of all of us. It's pretty remarkable. She's like, oh, yeah, I know that prayer. I know this, I know that, whatever. And she's like, yeah, I'm not really sure God exists. I was like, well, that's why they call it faith. Anyway, so I do try and take Yom Kippur off. One, I go to temple with my mom, and I have plenty of sins to atone from. But I also tried to do, my one daughter was off school. I did some with her. I did some with all of my kids. Had a nice family meal. Like, I feel like it was the beginning, kind of a refreshing start to a new year and cleanse a little bit. And I honestly didn't care about sports. I wasn't on the bird much. I watched last night's baseball game, but it wasn't, this is kind of, my job is kind of my all-consuming life. Like, I love sports. I love following it. I love all the different parts to it. And I knew we had Thursday night football. So the second I woke up this morning, I'm like, all right, back at work. What do we got? Thursday night football. We got baseball. Thursday night football. We got Giants Patriots. And then I looked at all the injuries that the Giants have. I'm like, good luck, Danny Dimes. Right? I'm sure even Eli's sitting there going, okay, have fun. So what can we talk about with tonight's game? And I think I found it. I don't know if the network sitcom will ever happen again, be as big again. I do think it's interesting how people are starting to realize that, hey, this bundling thing kind of works. We've been anti-bundle for so long. I'm going to do this as a rant at some point in comparison to the NCAA. You know, people want down with the NCAA, right? Like, look, the NCAA actually kind of works. You break it up and you get rid of the NCAA, it's not going to be anarchy. It'd be way worse without the NCAA, which is kind of like the cable bundle. Right? This whole cable bundle, like, man, I can't believe I pay $120. Then you're like, okay, I got Netflix, I got Amazon, I want this new Apple TV thing. They got some cool shows, don't they? I got Hulu, right? I got YouTube TV. Whatever your internet carrier is. Then you look down, you're like, damn, I'm paying $300 a month. I like the bundle better. Anyway. I'm not sure the network sitcom, Friends, probably doesn't ever happen again. You know, old people still watch network TV, right? And old people like cop shows, hospital shows, lawyer shows, right? From Boston Legal, Denny Crane, to L.A. Law back in the day. Cop shows, right? Remember Hill Street Blues? Right? To Law and Order, to Blue Bloods, whatever. Like, they're kind of recycling ideas here. I don't think the network sitcom focusing on 20 and 30-somethings ever happens again. You know why? Because 20 and 30-somethings and teenagers, they don't watch network TV. They just don't. Right? They just don't. So the idea that we're ever going to have a show that's as powerful for a younger generation. And remember, there's no politics in it. It was just kind of about young singles in New York, you know, relationship wise with friends and you know, mostly heterosexual relationships, etc., of the time. Like that, I don't think you're ever going to have another Friends. And when I watch tonight, and my big takeaway from watching the Giants and the Patriots is, we're never going to have this kind of dynasty in the NFL ever again. Do you understand how rare what we're watching is? Who's old enough to remember Halley's Comet? Right, it only comes around every 81 years, is that right? Buyer, look that thing up for me. Buyer knows this stat off the top of his head, I'm sure. Like, they know it's 83 years. 83, Buyer knows everything. Really kind of remarkable, right? 75 to 76 years. So either you're old enough or you're not, but like, Tom Brady was a 6th-round pick. Obviously, we're seeing other undrafted quarterbacks have success. But you even go back before that. Bill Belichick inherited a franchise that had been resurrected by Bill Parcells. So it had been well built, right? And then there was Pete Carroll, and you end up getting Belichick. Now, you'll probably be able to get another coach who has failed elsewhere. But do you get one from the Parcells tree that has the autonomy that Belichick has been given? This is a really big thing. It's not just that he was given autonomy. It's that, for the most part, throughout the success, the owner hasn't gotten involved. So you have something, you have a team that's built by Parcells. You have a franchise that's in a division that's completely and utterly dysfunctional for 20 years. You get one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, first on the cheap because you get him in the 6th round, and then on the cheap during the height of his superstardom because he's married to the most popular supermodel in the history of the profession. Could you get another quarterback who's a Hall of Famer in the 6th round? Sure. Could you get another impactful head coach like a Bill Belichick that's on his 2nd go-round so he knows the mistakes of his past? Sure. Could you get a team in a bad division? Sure, I'll give it to you. Probably not, but okay, sure. Could you get one that's built by Bill Parcells? Maybe one of his, you know, I mean, Sean Payton in New Orleans, of course, there are other disciples, and they could be well-constructed. In a division that's bad for 20 years, with a quarterback who will consistently take less money than going rate than he should? Like, if we stack together any one of those things happening, you'd have a small percentage chance of them happening again. All of them together, and you're talking 1 in 10 million. So, which, by the way, is like a scientific fact. You guys remember that from the OJ trial? Like, what Robert Kardashian convinced the jury was 1 in 20 million actually meant there's a chance. When the truth is, the way that science works, 1 in 20 million means there's actually no chance. They just have to throw out the 1 in 1. So, there's a 1 in 10, 1 in 20 million that all of these things could come together. That Tom Brady would never leave, that Bill Belichick would never leave, that an owner would almost never intervene, the division would this be this down, that it was well constructed, that their style of football, that the NFL would actually blend more to their style of football. Remember, the Patriots were one of the first teams to operate on third down throwing the football, whereas now it's become kind of the norm. Like, they were always ahead of the curve. The likelihood of any of this stuff happening again is small, and I think it's infinitesimal in terms of it ever happening again. The likelihood is we will never see another impactful sitcom for 20-somethings and 30-somethings like Friends. Plus, like, the idea of one show per week and you're going to wait, and it's like, now we binge-watch everything. Except Thrones, I guess. But, you know, there was nothing graphic on the show. They didn't curse. Like, all of these things would never happen again. Same as with the Patriots.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Game time!
This is game time.
It's game time.
On the Doug Gottlieb Show.
By the way, I'm glad Earl Spence appears he's going to be okay. Who doesn't wear a seatbelt anymore? Like, it's just the dinging, the bing, 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 bing. It's annoying as it is. Dan Byer, what's the game?
Doug, the game today is...
Guess who?
All right, guess who is a veteran wide receiver that says he is prepared for anything as he could be on the trading block in the near future?
Veteran wide receiver.
And I'm going to say, quote, prepared for anything, end quote.
Ooh, veteran wide receiver. It's got to be on a team that's bad, right?
Yep, you're getting warmer.
Okay. Veteran wide receiver, team that's bad.
Really
bad.
Oh,
Julio Jones?
No.
Really, really bad. AJ Green?
Yeah.
Yes, the Bengals wide receiver was able to practice in a limited fashion for the first time since suffering an ankle injury. He's not going to play against the Ravens this Sunday. Could in week 7. NFL trade deadline is October 29th. So the Bengals would have until then to deal him. But if he comes back healthy, you could see AJ Green out of Cincinnati.
What is the value of A.J. Green on the open market? He is hurt a lot. He's a great player. How old is A.J. Green now? 31?
Yeah, I would say that's probably about right. Great, yeah, he's got to be 30 or 31.
Yeah, 31. I mean, he's like Carson Palmer, just got to be worn down by being a Bengal that long, right? And the question is, kind of like Andre Johnson, right? Like, all right, you're showing your loyalty, they're just not that good. Like, do you want to go somewhere else, but... did you stay too long?
Yeah, they also have John Ross is out with injury. Yes. But as the team moves forward, you sign Tyler Boyd to a deal.
Yes.
You've got John Ross.
John Ross has come into his own. Before he got hurt, he finally became a wide receiver, right? Not just a guy who runs fast.
And realistically, your best offensive player is Joe Mixon.
Right.
So now A.J. Green becomes, you know, very expendable, especially when you look in the future. Guess who, Doug, is the New York Jet and said he will buy his mom a birthday gift after NFL arbitrator Derek Brooks rescinded his $21,000 fine for hitting Baker Mayfield in week 2.
Oh, it's what's his name, the defensive back. I know this. What the heck is the name of that? What is the defensive back from the Jets who got...
Yeah,
we'll give you that. Close enough. Jamal Adams.
Jamal Adams.
Yes, Jamal Adams.
He hit Baker Mayfield, that's right, and they rescinded the fine. So now his mom gets a birthday gift?
Yes, so he'll get his $21K back. And
is he going to buy her a $21,000 gift?
Maybe so.
Man, good to be his mom. Good to be the burfer.
Yeah. Guess who hasn't had any of their 3 previous managers last more than 2 seasons with the team?
Phillies.
Yeah.
Yes, 3 for 3, Doug. Phillies canning Gabe Kapler today after 2 seasons where they did not appear in the postseason. So the Phil's looking for a new skipper.
That will really, really hurt all those nutrition stores in the greater Philadelphia area, right? Because Gabe Kapler is one fit individual.
Yes.
He's one of those measures, measures and analyzes poop sort of guy. Like, he's all in on it.
Guess who, Doug, on the crew doesn't analyze poop but does disdain carving pumpkins?
That'd be you.
No.
I don't disdain. Yeah.
Ramos?
No.
Music?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hates carving pumpkins.
I just think the whole thing is very tedious, messy, and not very enjoyable.
Yeah, you know, I mean, listen, I think that the, I mean, there's a lot to it. But Halloween's a pretty awesome holiday, right?
I don't mind Halloween,
right,
or anything else. But like, when my fiance is like, "Hey, do you want to carve pumpkins?" I'm like, honestly, no, I don't feel
I don't think you should. That. No, that's not something you should want to do. When you have kids, you don't want to do it.
But it's also like a thing for younger couples. Like, people will get together and be like, "Hey, let's all carve pumpkins." No. And I'm like, I have no interest in doing that.
I have zero. I'm actually with you on that one. If you have couple friends that are saying, "Let's carve pumpkins," and it's not code for "let's get drunk."
That is what it's code for, but yeah.
But she actually wanted you to carve pumpkins?
In the past, when we first started dating, now she knows I have no interest.
None. I'm with you.
That's game, huh?
Game time.
This is game time on the Doug Gottlieb Show.
I do think there's a little irony there, right? That we can get certain Halloween outfits can be offensive, but it's okay to get dressed up as like a serial killer, right? You're just like, "Oh, I cannot believe you did that. That is so offensive." Why couldn't you get dressed up like Jason from Friday the 13th, right? Like a murderer or the Grim Reaper. Yeah, I don't know there. Don't know. Matt Money Smith joins the show upcoming next. You see him on the NFL Network. He's also co-host of the most successful afternoon radio show in the history of Los Angeles. So are they going to run Dave Roberts out of town? Find out next.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Doug Gottlieb show rolls on Fox Sports Radio. Matt Money Smith is part of Petros and Money. That's it's called PMS, Petros and Money Show. Every afternoon on AM 570. And they've been doing it for 15 years or so now. And look. The Lakers, it's still a Laker town, but the Dodgers have been so good that you could say it's half Lakers, half Dodgers, and they're trying to figure out where USC football and the Rams and Chargers fit in. Of course, Money's also the play-by-play voice of the Chargers. But it was expected the Dodgers were going at least back to the NLCS, let alone the World Series, and really probably expected to win it. Money, like, I want to get into Dave Roberts' decisions last night, but they did lose two games previously to put themselves in that position. What went so wrong for the Dodgers?
Well, bad matchup, I think, number one, right? Postseason tends to be about starting pitching and strength of bullpen. And, you know, the Nationals had at least one half of that equation in those two wins. And that's Strasburg and Max Scherzer out-pitching Clayton Kershaw and Rich Hill, respectively. And I think, you know, going into those two games, based on kind of Kershaw's past postseason performance and as dominant as Strasburg had been in his postseason appearances, that would make sense on paper. And you're like, yeah, okay. So you play 162, and at the end of them, you have a chance because you have won 106 games to play game five on your field with your crowd, that electric atmosphere that can maybe help carry you. And I thought they did all of that. So for me, I know you mentioned we're going to get into it, but I do think, you know, this came down to two very good teams with the best starting pitching in all the National League going at it, and the Dodgers had that slight advantage with the home field and their best going up against the Nationals' best. So I thought it was set up for them to win, and I think it was, you know, with six outs to go, and it finally got away from them.
All right, so Kershaw gets him out of the seventh. Did you agree with him starting the eighth?
Oh, absolutely not. And there was nobody, you know, whether it was in a text chat group I was with or on Twitter timeline, nobody, no one, not baseball people that have been around the game forever, not just average fans, not one person that I read or was communicating with thought that was the right idea. And pretty much the overwhelming opinion was, hey, Eaton is not Rendon or Soto. I'm okay with you bringing Kershaw out maybe in a high leverage situation, lean on that experience to get out an average to an above average hitter. I do not want that guy on the mound against Rendon and Soto, two of the absolute best hitters in all of baseball.
Anthony Rendon hit, and I don't know if he's a low ball pitcher. That one wasn't really a strike, right? But then to leave him in, and he's, I get it, lefty-lefty matchup, and he throws one pitch to Soto when you got Kolarik out there who'd gotten him out three times. Like, what?
Well, know, and I would just go back to the Rendon. Yeah, he got a low ball to hit, but you know, look, there's not as much action, there's not as much heat, you know, so he could hit that. You know, if that's Kenta Maeda, who was their absolute best player out of the bullpen against right-handers, I feel better about it. I think every fan would feel better about it. If he hit that pitch off Kenta Maeda and you knew he offered it up, you're like, well, hey, look, that's their best righty against our best righty. You tip of the cap to Rendon. Same thing. Then you bring in Kolarik, and it's your best lefty versus their best lefty. And if Soto gets him, tip of the cap. That's all you want. You just want the percentages. You know, it kind of just not. I'm not saying this because you're a basketball guy, Doug, but, you know, like my whole issue with hero ball is, it's not the highest percentage shot. I want the highest percentage shot
And this is the thing. All of us can come out as radio hosts or, you know, ex-jocks, whatever, and say the use of analytics is overrated. Okay? But Dave Roberts basically said, the analytics, and it bit him in the ass last night.
Yeah, I mean, what I, you know, not to call out my own Twitter handle or anything, but I don't tweet a lot. And as I was going through Twitter and I saw something Andy McCullough posted, who's a great baseball writer, was at the LA Times for a while and now works for The Athletic. He posted when Kershaw came out, it just goes to show you how little faith Dave has in Kenley and Kelly. And I, you know, retweeted with comment. I said, absolutely wrong. This is an emotional decision. And Dave Roberts thinks it's a fairy tale where he gets to have a happy ending for his guy. It's not. It's statistics and it's eyeballs. And there are no stats that supported him bringing Kershaw in, and not a single scout's eyeball would say, hey, you have your choice of anyone not named Walker Buehler to face Rendon and Soto. Not a single one would choose Kershaw. Not one. I mean, not one.
What about leaving Kelly in?
Well, again, I don't know what you're thinking. He's a one-inning pitcher. He's a guy that goes out, he reaches back, and he throws as hard as he can. Those are one-inning guys. That's not, you know, a finesse Ross Stripling, someone who's used to being stretched out. Kelly is a one-inning guy, and he had a masterful inning. And Kenta Maeda had a masterful inning. You could argue, bring Kenta back out, you know, kind of thing. That's something you could have done. So, like, that's what I don't understand. It was just so against what everything signaled it should have been. And it's not just analytics. I know people don't like analytics, and there's a human element, and sometimes you got to go with your gut. But your gut tells you over the course of a season, hey, Joe Kelly's a one-inning guy. Your gut tells you that Maeda is your best right-hander against righties. He's been that way the whole series, same as you said with Kolarik against Soto. He made him look like a fool multiple times out there. So it's very odd, you know, that those were the decisions that were made.
Last thing, we got to run. Likelihood Dave Roberts is back next year?
I think very likely. They just signed him to an extension, you know, and he helped guide them to their greatest regular season ever. The moment got the best of them. You know, it happens to everybody. You get emotional. You have relationships. You have to try to distance yourself. But we're not robots. You know, we're human beings with emotions and relationships and connections. And I think he really wanted that one for Clayton. And, you know, that decision got the best of him.
All right. We still got to talk about Clayton, but we'll do it on our show. I know you'll do it on your show. Matt Money Smith, AM 570 N, the voice of the LA Chargers. Money, thanks so much.
Anytime, Doug. Thanks, man.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Get to my thoughts on what it says about Clayton Kershaw. Plus, one NFL team is making a really smart decision that they're basically doing it to avoid becoming another team. That's next.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
What up, Doug Gottlieb Show? Fox Sports Radio. Can we have an honest Kershaw discussion? Are we allowed to do that? I do. I have some good stuff to tell you about how one team's trying to avoid becoming the Rams in a second. But can we have an honest Clayton Kershaw discussion without, like, let's not get super emotional here. Okay? I don't want to call Clayton Kershaw a choker, a choke artist, because there have been some times in the postseason where Clayton Kershaw has pitched exceedingly well. Right? On short rest, he's pitched well. Against the New York Mets, I remember him having an incredible back against the wall, had to pitch well start. For the record, Clayton Kershaw, this is since 2011. Right? 2011, he led the league in ERA, strikeouts, whip, and fewest hits per nine inning. That's the best pitcher in the baseball. That's why he won his first Cy Young. He finished second in the Cy Young voting the next year. He led the league in ERA, game started, whip, hits per nine inning, and ERA plus. He won the Cy Young. He won the Cy Young. He was third in Cy Young, fifth in Cy Young, second in Cy Young. This is 2017, led the league in ERA. And then, you know, he had the back problem going back 2 years ago. And, you know, look, this year he was probably their third best pitcher. And even as their third best pitcher, he's still a ton of innings, 178. 3.03 ERA, 16-5, started 28 games. Struck out 189 batters. Now, that's way down from the 301 of 2015. But he also pitched 230 innings that year. This year, only 178. The idea is there's a stretch there of 7 years or so. Because, you know, 1 year, he didn't win the Cy Young, but it's because he got hurt. He had a 1.69 ERA in 2016. Like, this dude, he's the best pitcher in baseball since 2011. We okay saying that? Consistently the best pitcher from 2011 until 2017. That's a seven-year stretch. He was the best pitcher in baseball. During that same stretch, he didn't get in the playoffs until 2013. He'd been in the playoffs earlier in his career, hadn't pitched a ton, did have some failures, did have some success. He was incredible against the Mets in a must-win game in 2015. His ERA is 4.43 in the postseason. His ERA in the regular season, his ERA in the regular season is 2.44. It's nearly twice as high. Now, is it harder to throw strikes? Sure. Is the weather cooler? Absolutely. But the thing we always say about the playoffs is, well, it's a small sample size. And while that's true, we have a big enough sample of the small sample size with Clayton Kershaw. He's started 25 games in playoff baseball. He's pitched in 32 overall. His numbers are not terrible, but in comparison to what he normally does, they're not good either. He gets hit harder. So if this was an entire season, and 25 starts could make up an entire season, he's given up 24 home runs. Now, by comparison, he gave up 28 home runs this year. That's the most in his career. Previous to that, the most he had given up was in 2017 at 23 home runs. Like, look, his numbers are not great. And especially when the juxtaposition of one numbers versus the others. And I would say that I think he's Peyton Manning. It's Peyton Manning. Now you can tell me, hey, Peyton Manning won two Super Bowls. The second one, he had very little to do with. It would be as if in 2 years, the Dodgers win the World Series and Clayton Kershaw starts a game and doesn't pitch well. Right? That's kind of what this, that amounts to. And he won one with the Colts, and they were playing against the Chicago Bears at the time that had Rex Grossman as their starting quarterback. And whether it's style of play, whether it's being beaten down by the regular season, whatever it is, I can't think of a guy who's had more opportunities to be great in the playoffs and has been consistently great in the regular season and that hasn't been great in the postseason. Can you think of one? This isn't Barry Bonds early in his career where he didn't get that many at-bats and he was bad. And, of course, steroid Barry Bonds was the most dominant postseason player we'd ever seen. I love Clayton Kershaw. I actually thought coming in and getting the strikeout was awesome. But then they should have gotten him out of there. And now we get back to the Kershaw narrative of being bad in the playoffs. When I think that was just father time. That's the difference between a 92-mile-an-hour slider and an 89-mile-an-hour slider. That is just, it's just that different. Want to get to this story. In the NFL, you usually get, you know, you come back from a Sunday and they give you one day off, and then Tuesday they install and Wednesday's full practice. Christian McCaffrey has a completely different schedule. Christian McCaffrey was off yesterday. He leads the league in touches, yards from scrimmage, has led the Panthers to three straight wins, even with the absence of Cam Newton. His back is a little sore. They did fly home from London, to fly to London, but they want to make sure he's okay carrying this load. So McCaffrey is getting Wednesdays off. That is the new norm. They're managing his load, but managing it not by cutting his carries and his touches in the game, but what are we doing making him go out there and practice in full pads on a Wednesday? Don't do anything except rehab. And it feels to me, I don't know if it feels to you, feels to me like the last thing they want is to be the Rams. Now, McCaffrey didn't, knock wood, suffer the knee injury that Todd Gurley suffered in college. But Todd Gurley was used and used and used a ton early on with the Rams. And now, like, look, he might not even go this weekend, right? He's still that banged up. And that's with a couple of extra days off because they played on a Thursday coming off of a game before when he only got five touches. The Carolina Panthers are doing what smart teams do, smart people do, learning from other people's mistakes. The Rams overused Todd Gurley, and now they're not going to get nearly the return on their investment. Christian McCaffrey's the best back in the league. I told you that before the season, and it's played out as such, and they're just trying to manage it, trying to give him as much rest so we can use him on Sundays. Pretty smart. Pretty smart. Doing it right, save 5% every day by shopping at Lowe's, in-store or online. Save 5% on eligible purchases just by using your Lowe's Advantage card. Do it right for less. Start with Lowe's. Subject to credit approval. Cannot be combined with other credit offers. Exclusions apply. See store for details. U.S. only. You know, to me, the Rams trying to give Todd Gurley extra time now is a lot like what I told people about Carmelo Anthony late in his career trying to lose weight and be thinner and play lighter and be in better shape to try and get back into the NBA. Like, look, dude, you were out of shape for a good 10 years while playing in the NBA, eating poorly. Even if it was like 10 pounds overweight, it wears you down so that by the time you do lose the weight, you don't have the explosiveness that you would normally have playing at a lighter weight. It's the same thing for Todd Gurley. Like, you can give him rest now, but that knee's been damaged by the injury. It's been damaged by overuse. And so has the rest of the body. So even now when he's at his freshest, he's still not the same Todd Gurley. And that's what we're trying to avoid with Christian McCaffrey. So I like the idea of prevention as opposed to rehab. It's the reason that, you know, medical insurance is so important, right? Because they tell you prevention is far less expensive and far easier on the body than it is to rehab. Super Bowl champion tight end Ben Watson joins the show. Just got released by the New England Patriots. Is he done? And if not, where will he end up? What's this wild ride been like? Find out next.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Let's catch up with Benjamin Watson, who joins us in the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Will you watch tonight?
Will I watch what? The debate?
No, the games. The game.
Oh, the game. yeah, of course. I probably will watch it. You know, I'm still a football fan. So I still watch Thursday night and, you know, Sundays whenever I get an opportunity to. So, yeah, the plan is to sit down. And my son is so into football right now, it's ridiculous. Like, he'll be sitting beside me with his towel tucked into his pajamas on the side and with the hat on and everything. So, we'll definitely probably watch some of the game before you have to go to bed.
Okay. I mean, so how would you describe emotionally how you think you'll feel watching the Patriots play without you in uniform?
Well, you know, the thing about football is you always have relationships with different players. So no matter what happens with an organization, when you know guys that are playing, you watch to support your teammates and you want to see how they do and, you know, make sure they don't get injured and see them have the success and all those sorts of things. So no matter what happens with an organization, I think that what's unique about this game is that, you know, when you go through, you know, in my case, training camp with the guys in the whole off season, you start to form relationships. So you do have a vested interest in seeing how they do when they perform.
Why did you not get the chance you thought you'd get?
That would be a great question for Coach. Coach Belichick, I think he addressed the media on that. I think his words were he didn't have a roster spot. Besides that, you know, you would have to ask him. You know, I did what I could do, and I feel good about the fact that I gave it a shot. It's part of my career. I gave it a shot. I prepared my body, prepared myself mentally and physically, and, you know, the family supported my decision to do so. And, you know, we're there all training camp and tried to earn a spot on the team. And, you know, sometimes that's not enough.
Benjamin Watson joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Your wife had to be hot, right? She's like, I moved 7 kids. She had to be hot.
You know, for all the wives, it's a very unique situation for wives of athletes, you know, especially in a situation like that. They are very, and as they should be, as any wife is very defensive of their loved ones, of their husbands. And so their major concern is for, number one, for our safety, our physical safety. And playing a violent game like football, it's very stressful for them. My wife included, sometimes she gets migraines on game days. Well, she's a migraine sufferer anyway, but she emotionally she deals with having to see her husband go out there and play, and have this type of an occupation. And then when something like that happens, when you feel like, you know, you've been wronged or you've been hurt, you know, when you get released, stuff like that, they're very defensive of us. And so she knows she wasn't happy. As far as the moving goes, we always move wherever we play. So one thing we decided early on in my career was no matter how many places I go to, as much of a pain in the butt it is to move, we made a commitment that we're not going to separate. We're not going to have a home base in one place while I'm somewhere else playing. That's not healthy for our marriage. It's not healthy for my relationship with my children. And so while it's tough to restart in different places all the time, that's just kind of part of the deal, what we decided to do.
Benjamin Watson joining us in the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Likelihood you play for someone else this year?
I don't know. It's a good question. I'm still kind of digesting what happened. I definitely feel like I could play this year, you know, after, you know, playing in the preseason, just the way my body feels right now. It would depend on the opportunity, when it presented itself, if it presents itself, the right one. And it would definitely be a conversation with how that will work out. So that's a question I can't answer. I can say that I haven't made any final decisions either way. So we're just kind of working through this.
Help us out. We watched the Patriots kind of in awe, at least against the Steelers early on. Granted, the Bills game was a hard-fought game, but this feels from the outside like a special group. I know it's got to be hard with the conflicting emotions of you not getting to play for them, but is this team as good as they've looked at times early in the season?
This team is an extension. Well, it's its own team, and every year is different. this team benefits from having a lot of carryover for the last decade and a half. And so while you look at each year separately and each team has to prove their own worth every single year and have to prepare on their own, there's also a carryover effect with how to prepare and how to do things. And when people come into the organization and they come from other places, they assimilate to the way things are being done and how the team prepares every week, how they go out and perform and play, how they get back on the bicycle the next week and do the same thing all over again, how they never get too high with success or too low with a loss. And so, you know, it's early in the season. There's a lot that can change. There's a lot that may not change. But when you look at the last 5 weeks, we've got a W. They've won. And that's the primary goal. Then number two, when you look at how they won, with a style of defense, which will always take you very far, and with an offense that is, you know, top of the league in scoring, that is doing a lot of things efficiently, it's a matter of keeping those things up and changing them when you have to, because in this league, people are going to figure it out, and they're going to try to do something, and so that's why you have to be able to adapt every week and at halftime.
Benjamin Watson joining us in the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Look, anyone who knows you or has written some of the things you've written, read some of the things you've written, had a conversation with you, like, you got a lot in you, you know? Like, you're not just a football dude, and you've done a lot. How hard is it to go back into that arena? Like, the competitor in you, I'm sure, wants to go like, hey, I'm in great shape. I'm moving well. Like, I want to prove to them they made a mistake in releasing me. But then I'm sure there's the not only push from home, but also just the knowledge that there's more out there for you. What's that decision like in terms of trying to come back and play and protecting yourself for your next career?
That's a good question, because there's a balance there. And, you know, while on the one hand, football has been my career for the last 15 years, and it's really been a career that I prepared for my entire life, which is why I'm competitive with it and which is why I continue to have a desire to play. You also, as you get older and you have children and you're married and life changes and you're picking up kids from ballet and dropping them off like I just did, you realize that there is a next phase of life. And you want to enter into that at the right time, while also not selling the current career short. And I think that's the balance that we all work through. The great thing, I think, for me is that for the last several years, I've been able to have a hand in both. I have been able to speak into social issues, issues of faith, of family, of fatherhood, you know, have a voice when it comes to those things, while also having a career in my chosen career of football. I consider that to be a blessing. And I've always said, you know, the right time will come when the door shuts. And, you know, this may be this is a door shutting. I don't know if it's the final door, but God has a way of moving you out of stuff at the right time. And, you know, so my prayer and, you know, what I've appreciated from so many people that have contacted me over the last few days is that, you know, they've encouraged me and said, you know, I'm just praying that you have discernment when it's time to move on to the next thing. And that's what we're trying to do right now, trying to figure that out.
Yeah, it's gotta be a hard thing. But you will watch tonight. You're not the amount of bitterness where you're like, man, I can't even watch that stuff.
No, I'll tell you this. When I played here the first time in New England, I was here for 6 years. And this is not a secret. I've talked about it before. I was drafted here. I was signed to a deal that was unprecedented at the time for a 32nd pick. Since then, rules have been changed because of what happened to me and others who were drafted here as far as the length of our contract. I played the whole thing out, you know, became a free agent, an old free agent at 29, you know, in the league. And there definitely was a lot of, you know, bitterness probably. When I left here, just the way things went down. I always enjoyed playing here, enjoyed the fans, enjoyed the atmosphere, but the business side of it, like with a lot of different organizations, it wasn't correct, in my opinion, the way I and some others were treated. And so there was times, you know, especially when I left here, I was like, I'm not watching that team, I don't care. You know, but time has gone by, it's been a decade has passed, and I do believe that part of the desire to come back here and opportunity when it lined up was some sort of, you know, redemption type thing. Now, it didn't happen the way I thought it would. I would love to say, hey, I'm starting tonight and I'm playing and this is great. That's not the way the story has come at this point. But I understand, you know, the business of it. I don't like the fact that I didn't have a chance to play this year. But, you know, I understand that one thing Coach Belichick always says, he's going to do his best for his football team. He thinks that was best for his football team. I can't say that it was personal. I can say that he was, you know, making a decision that he thought was best. So as far as not watching the team, I feel like I should be, and I am more mature than that. And I also I also really want my children. We talked about this. My wife and I have talked about this. And even when I came, one of the toughest things for me was to come in here and tell my kids that I got released and I got cut and that I'm no longer, because they're so excited. And that's really the tears that I shed, was really coming and telling them that, you know what, Daddy's, we're up here in Boston for the year, but Daddy's not going to be playing. But I told them I don't want them to be upset. And if they want to watch the game because all their friends are watching the game up here in Boston, then watch the game and cheer for them. I don't want you guys to take out some of my pain. I don't want you guys to have to deal with that. And so we'll watch, you know, like I said, I may not watch the whole thing, but I know for sure my son is going to want to see part of it. And so I'll sit there with him, and we'll work through it together.
Well, you won't be sad if there's a tight end that has a drop. You're like, I know you're one of my guys, but I won't feel terrible about it.
I actually just got done texting the tight ends, telling them good luck tonight. Ryan Izzo and Matt Lacoste are two great young players, in my opinion, and they're only going to get better. I've told both of them, in this game, there's not, at least for me, and for most guys in the league, we compete with one another.
Yep.
But we want to be better than each other. We don't want others to fail for us to be better. We just want to prove ourselves. And so there's never anything like that. And, you know, my hope is that they succeed and that they're able to, you know, have a long career. And at one time, kind of like I've been able to with them and other young players and what was done for me, be able to show those guys the ropes and teach them and encourage them along the way.
Awesome stuff. Well, listen, enjoy watching the game with your son tonight. Can't wait to hear what you're up to next. In the meantime, you're always welcome here, Ben. Thanks so much for joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show.
Appreciate it, Doug. Take care.
Benjamin Watson, class dude, great player, long career in the NFL, and you just wait to hear what's next for him. What's next for him? Colin Cowherd thinks wide receivers have no value, including Odell Beckham Jr. Give you my thoughts next.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Every day at this time on the Doug Gottlieb Show, we like to play for a previous show on Fox Sports Radio or Fox Sports 1. We call it... What does the Fox say? This was Colin Cowherd talking about the Browns and what they can do with Odell Beckham Jr.
So let's go look at his five games, the targets, the catches, the yards. So what you're going to notice here is nothing, and that's the point. So in week one, oh my God, he was targeted a ton, and the team was awful and got blown out. In week two, he was targeted a ton, had his biggest game, and the team won. And then week three, they targeted him a lot, and they lost. And then week four, they started scaling back the targets, and they won. And then week five, they really scaled back, and they were terrible. There is no trend. There is no correlation. There is no cause and effect. They target him a lot, they're terrible. They target him a lot, they win. They target him very little, they win. They target him very little on Monday, they get crushed. He's talented. There's no correlation to his performance to anything that happens on the scoreboard. Yet we do have a correlation with this team that when Baker Mayfield is sacked multiple times, the Browns are 3-8. Uh-oh, that's a problem.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, what he's saying is that whether they use him or don't use him, it doesn't seem to matter because Odell Beckham Jr. is not a determinant as to whether or not you're successful or you fail. All right, we got that? That said, I mean, like, look, we can mean all those things, and you do have to have, but you have to deal with the problems that you currently have. And I, you know, Colin's under this auspice, hey, let's just trade him for an offensive lineman. One, any lineman who's good enough, they probably don't want Odell Beckham Jr. Right? They probably, additionally, an average offensive lineman is not as good as Odell Beckham Jr. Like, can he be a pain in the ass? Yes, but let's not undersell his talent. I think some of this is operator error. It just is. Have you ever, you guys ever seen professional drivers before? Like, you know, there are people that really know how to drive your car. And you'll get into, they'll get into your car and they start driving like, holy cow, I had no idea you could do this in my car. That's basically what's happening with the Cleveland Browns. No, they don't have a great offensive line. No, their quarterback's not great. But they got some operator error. Because I do think between their quarterback, his lack of experience, his lack of athletic talent at times, and the play caller, I don't think they're getting the most out of what they have. That's why you need a professional big-time play caller to get the best out of what you got. Because Odell Beckham Jr. can play. Like, I don't know, I don't think he'll ever live up to his assumed value, but that dude can play. And jettisoning him 5 games into the year when you're trying to figure out how to use him, this is why he should have been in OTAs. So he had a better working relationship and they had a better idea of how to use him. All of these things do, in fact, matter. But getting rid of him, I think, would be suboptimal. What's up, the Fox say? Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. All right, coming up next, RJ Bell is going to join us from pregame.com. We'll get you ready for tonight's game. Have we ever seen a team this early in the year have this many consecutive big spreads like we're seeing from the Pats? And Tom Verducci will join us. Just how egregious were the errors of the Dodgers last night? Find out next.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
What up, Doug Gottlieb Show? Fox Sports Radio. Joe Kelly blew it for the Dodgers in the 10th. You can tell me all you want about Clayton Kershaw, who two straight sliders, two straight home runs. The game was tied. I don't know why Joe Kelly, who's a one-inning pitcher, went out there for a second inning, but he did, and he proceeded to load the bases and give up a grand slam home run to Howie Kendrick. I will say this. I love Howie Kendrick, not just because he's a former Angel, but because I've yet to hear anybody say anything bad ever about Howie Kendrick. So kind of happy about Howie Kendrick hitting it in the Grand Slam. And I'm not really a Dodger fan, but because Fox has the World Series and it's on our LA affiliate, I'm kind of bummed they're not going to be in the World Series because I would have gotten to go to another World Series for free. But very selfishly, I'm upset today. But I will say this about Joe Kelly's ill-fated 10th inning. Do you know what it started with? It started with a walk. Right? It almost feels like any late inning, extra inning, blown save, blown game starts with a walk. Every breakup starts with a, hey, we need to talk about something. Right? Every single breakup. Every single one. Every disrespectful comment starts with the, hey, no disrespect, but, excuse me. Always followed by something disrespectful. Yeah, the same thing happens when guys like, hey, I'm a racist, but, whoa, something racist is coming out. Whatever you thought about saying that made you have to preface it with, I'm not a racist, you probably shouldn't be thinking about it, and you definitely shouldn't be saying. Because no qualifier. Right? No qualifier. Right? There's never a Thursday night football game which the losing team didn't complain about playing Thursday night football. Never happened. And there's seemingly never been an extra innings collapse without the batter walking the first batter. Oh boy. He walked the first batter. We know what comes next. And sure enough, it did come next. Let's check in with Vegas.
Wait till I give my money right.
Are you tired of losing money every week?
Yeah, boy.
Do you want to be in the know?
How about new?
Well, we might not know, but Vegas always knows.
Vegas!
Bring out the bottles.
RJ Bell. The show is called Straight Out of Vegas. It follows our show here on Fox Sports Radio. It's an hour long. Gets you ready for Jonas Knox, RJ Bell. All the lines of the day, all the action of the night, straight out of the voice of Vegas. And that's pregame.com or at RJ in Vegas on Twitter is the best way to follow his work as well as listening to his radio show. RJ, were you like me screaming at Dave Roberts' moves or lack thereof in the 8th and in the 10th inning?
Well, first off, I should say this. I'm not necessarily one of the great winners in Vegas history, but... Oh, wait, never mind. not a racist, not... Yeah. I got to be honest. I mean, Doug, you've played college ball. I mean, you've been on the inside. To me, when you are inside, whatever it is, and then you read the outside analysis, they never even know which way is up because they don't know all the details. So on the surface, I agree with you, but I'm always skeptical. Like, do we really know how good the other guy felt? Was there a little injury, right? I tend to give a break to the managers with that kind of thing. You don't?
I don't know. Like, listen, baseball is generally by the numbers, right? And I hate when guys fall and it's by the numbers. But, like, look, you're asking Kershaw to do something he doesn't normally do. And a lefty-righty matchup against Rendon, like, that just doesn't feel like the right idea to anybody.
Well, let me ask you this. If the Dodgers had won and Roberts had shown confidence as he did in Kershaw, aren't the Dodgers in a better position? Obviously, winning is key, right? You lose, it doesn't matter. It feels like it might have been a close call for him, and he figures, let's show Kershaw, let's get this monkey off his back. Maybe that was the thing.
I don't know if this is the time to be getting monkeys off backs, right? Mm-hmm. It's time.
But they made the World Series a few times. They want to win it.
Yes, we need six more outs. We need six more outs. We can worry about monkeys off your back in the next series or in the next season. I don't know.
How much of this has to do with your free tickets that are down the drain now?
That I'm upset about it?
Yeah.
None. It was just like it's like a train wreck you see coming. You're like, oh, get off the tracks. Ooh, get off the tracks. Get off the. And then finally you're like, I'll just watch it. Like the Joe Kelly thing, saw that one coming a mile away.
Very last thing for me on this is, in a weird way, it's kind of like the old saying, you don't get fired for buying IBM, right? So back in the day, it was like, okay, we got to spend $300,000 on a computer system, buy IBM, even though the competitor's $250,000, because if it messes up, I'm going to tell my boss, hey, I bought IBM. Where if you buy the lesser name, it's on you. Well, it seems like if consensus said, take out Kershaw, Roberts, just out of his own job security, even if you felt like it was a slightly better decision to leave him in, you should have taken him out because it's hard to blame him now. Making this unusual decision is giving him extra heat.
Yeah. Yeah, but it would have given him extra. I think he did it because it's Clayton Kershaw. I think it's the same reason they started Kershaw in game two instead of game three, because they just can't get over the fact that it's Clayton Kershaw. Same reason they gave him a bunch of money last year in an extension that they didn't have to. Like, he's not that pitcher anymore. No one thinks he is. And, you know, unfortunately, it's really, really hard to tell the best in the game for 7 years, you're our third best pitcher, and you're not the best guy in this spot. It's not what you do, but that's so those tough decisions are for. RJ Bell, join us. Pregame.com is the official lines provider of the Associated Press. Of course, he's the founder of Pregame.com. Tonight, the line is what, 17?
Yes.
And the over-under is what?
Over-under right now is 42.5.
Okay, so it feels like they're both going to put up some points. How are the Giants expected to score without most of their offensive weaponry?
Yeah, so really, if you think about it, at 42 in a total of 17, this is one of those, and sometimes the bookies won't let you do it, but because it's called a correlated parlay, not like my winner on Pittsburgh and San Francisco last week, but it's correlated as in, hey, if you like the favorite, chances are there's more points that are going to be scored. Because why? The points are less valuable the more points you score, and vice versa. So it's usually dog and under, favorite and over with this kind of spread. By the way, this is the biggest spread in the history of Thursday night football. And we've got a history. If you look at all Thursday games where the spread is greater than 10, 21 times in history, 0-21, the underdog is, and the underdog against the spread, 4-16-1. I think it's rational. If you have less prep time, it reverts the natural skill, right? Whatever chance I'd have against you in a 2-on-2, you know, I pick my guy, you pick yours, very little chance, I'm thinking. But it'd be almost none if we just decided to play, you know, we're sitting there, hey, let's play. give us a couple weeks. We go look at your old film. Maybe we start to put some stuff in your food. Who knows what? And then it can be something other than natural talent. I think these short weeks when there's a dominant team and the spread tells us that, it's hard to take the dog, history says.
What was your delayed parlay thing? Because I said, you and I both agreed on San Francisco.
Yeah.
I know, but there was something that had to happen. What did Pittsburgh had to win?
Yeah, it was Pittsburgh. I said I liked Pittsburgh +3.5 and San Fran. The rationale being if Pittsburgh covers, it makes Baltimore look less good, and it explains a little bit of the Cleveland win. Because to me, the only thing that kept me from making San Fran like a monster play was Cleveland looked mighty good last week. So in this case, it was from last week's perspective, and the week prior was against Baltimore when they looked good. So I wanted in a way to kind of punch a hole into Baltimore. So since I like Pittsburgh, I figure play Pittsburgh and San Fran, because if one happens, it will help the other one.
Your pick of the week this week is what?
Okay, I'm going to go with the San Francisco 49ers again. And this is a great lesson on how professionals think about these games. Home field advantage in the NFL is 3, typically, average. Rams are a little less than that, not a great home field. So let's call it 2.5 as an estimate. So now we got to make the case the Rams are clearly better than the 49ers. And if you look at Football Outsiders, a good analytics site, they actually have the 49ers as the best team in the NFL, better than the Patriots. Doesn't mean that's true, but their numbers are pretty good. And they actually have the Rams at, I think it's 16 or 17. Gurley, we know, limited. We also know without the play action, Goff has struggled. So to me, defense isn't as good for the Rams. Offensive line isn't as good. Gurley isn't as good. Goff's not as good because of those factors, it seems. 49ers might be even. Let's make the case that Football Outsiders is wrong. Okay, they're even. We're getting 3.5. Should only be 2.5. And 3 is such a key number. I think this line should be more towards maybe Rams 1, 1.5. I love, especially at 3.5 now. You got to get to 3.5 because it's kind of wavering between 3.5 and 3. At 3.5, I love the 49ers.
You know, McGlinchey didn't practice on Thursday. He's not going to play against the Rams. That's your you don't have your right tackle. You also don't have your fullback either, who is such an important. I like the other side to this one. Well, Rams extra time off. Right, this is the same reason I like the Niners. The Niners had a week off. The Rams played Thursday. Now they're playing at home on a Sunday, as opposed to the Niners, who just played on Monday. And you lose your tight end, you lose your right tackle.
Well, here's what I think. For the Super Bowl this year, I think we bet dinner. We'll get Colin to come. That's the deal. It'll be me, you, and Colin, loser between this bet pays.
Just this one bet?
This one bet? Or we can do a little 7-game contest next 7 weeks, whatever you want.
I like the next 7 weeks.
Okay, but this is week one.
How are the Jets only 7-point dogs to the Cowboys? that one to me seems juicy.
Yeah, I was just on New York radio, and they were asking the same thing. They felt like it was short. Obviously, Darnold's back. The question is you know, how healthy is he, right? And to me, I think it's a good guess he's not 100% because, like, monotype, you know, that drags out, right? You're a little lethargic, whatever. Now, these are professional athletes, but still. But remember, Doug, and you're strong at math. If you flip home fields here, it's a 6-point swing. The line would be 13. So Dallas at home -13. Would you think that's short?
No.
See, and that's the thing with road favorites. We don't, in our minds, it's just not natural to think it's really a full 6 points because you go, you know, from home to neutral to home. So I probably like Dallas because here's the thing about road favorites. The danger is if they look past the game because they're on the road and they're against a team they clearly are better than. That's how they're the road favorite. But you know what might be an analog to this kind of game, a motivated Dallas, is when a team has a road favorite spot after a bye. They do exceptionally well. Why? Because since they have a bye, they're not going to be looking ahead. They're ready for that next game. I think Dallas is kind of like being in a bye here, not because of the rest, but because of the focus, because they've lost 2 in a row. So I'm not anxious to play the Jets. I just don't like laying a touchdown on the road.
All right, that's the voice of RJ Bell. By the way, who are you on tonight? So with that huge line?
I actually would be looking at some rushing props. I don't like the game itself, but I would say find a rusher on the Patriots and go over. Just pick the guy you like over yardage. Yep. And the reason is, with Brady banged up on a short week,
get a lead early,
short run,
the
run, run.
Yep, get a lead early, short in the game.
Yep.
I got it. RJ Bell, check out Straight Out of Vegas. It's the show that follows ours right here on Fox Sports Radio. Follow him on Twitter at RJ in Vegas. Go to pregame.com. RJ, thanks so much.
My pleasure, Doc. Thank you.
All right, from all sports and sports betting to baseball, Tom Verducci, MLB Insider, joins us. Is Dave Roberts' job security in question based upon his job performance last night? Find out next.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Tom Verducci, MLB Network, MLB on Fox, getting ready for the DS, the CS, the WS, and there'll be no Dodgers. No Dodgers this year in the NLDS. Tom, your reaction to what transpired late last night at Chavez?
I have to give the Washington Nationals so much credit. I mean, the quality there at bats was light years ahead of the Dodgers at bats throughout the game, but especially Rendon and Soto. I mean, we saw that earlier in the wild card game against Milwaukee. It's just a tough, tough team to put away, the best two-strike hitting team in the National League. And I just thought, you know, even when the Dodgers weren't able to tack on, they were really playing with this game just because of how tough that Washington lineup is. And to me, Douglas, and listen, if you watch the Giants, New York Giants back in the day when Lawrence Taylor was in his prime, you knew that on every snap, pre-snap, the quarterback, the offensive coordinator had to account for Lawrence Taylor because he did so many things, played in so many different places. I watched the Nationals play, and I say the same thing about Juan Soto and his place in the lineup. He basically scared the daylights out of Dave Roberts, and to me, that's what won the game for the Washington Nationals, that he just completely disrupted whatever strategy the Dodgers had because they just feared him so much.
But they didn't fear him enough to go to a guy who had gotten him out three times, right? I mean, like, Kolarik struck him out twice. I get it's Clayton Kershaw's lefty-lefty matchup, but Kolarik made him look bad, and Soto hit a ball that hasn't landed yet off Kershaw.
Yeah, I'm talking about more with second, third. That's where you bring in Kolarik to pitch to Soto, and Roberts wanted no part of him, leaving Joe Kelly in to pitch with the bases loaded.
What was that?
For error. That was bad. I would have had Kolarik in there on Soto, but again, he'd scared him. Listen, it was set up for Kershaw, man. I mean, he comes into the game. He goes 1-2-3 on Eaton with three pitches, struck him out, comes back, throws a terrible pitch to Rendon and a terrible pitch to Soto. I mean, you're not taking Clayton Kershaw out to pitch. They have Kolarik pitch to Soto. It's not him. Kershaw just has to make a pitch, and he made as bad of a pitch as he could ever make.
What do we do with Clayton Kershaw now? Like, how do we – how? I mean, look, there are just going to be people that call him a choker. He actually has had some great moments in the playoffs, but yeah. The numbers are so stark in comparison to what he's been able to do over the regular season. You do this for a living. How can you contextualize Clayton Kershaw?
Yeah, there's definitely a big hole in his resume. There's no question about it because of so many different failures. I mean, people think of Andy Pettit, you know, as a great postseason pitcher. I mean, he had a lot of really bad games. He was essentially the same pitcher he was in October as he was in the regular season. Kershaw's a little bit worse in the postseason. Now, I give the dude credit, man. He's taken the ball in so many different relief appearances. That maybe some other people wouldn't. He never turns the ball down. He's had some injury issues the last few years. Doug, when I was watching this game and I saw him go out there for that eighth inning and he's pitching from the stretch, I went, uh-oh, what is up with that? Why is he acting like he's a set-up left-handed reliever? This is a guy with one of the most idiosyncratic windups in the history of baseball. He closed Game 7 in the NLCS last year using his windup. Why is he pitching in the stretch? That was it struck me as very odd. Maybe there was something he was not comfortable about. I didn't see it as a good sign or a guy who was totally comfortable being in that spot. So to answer your question, when they put him in the Hall of Fame and he gets all the accolades in the world as one of the best starting pitchers of this generation, if not the best, the second paragraph is going to be about postseason failures. Unless, you know, he gets a David Price season and makes good on a mulligan somewhere here.
Tom Verducci joining us in the Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Dave Roberts has done such a good job getting them to two straight World Series. But as you said, whether he got spooked by Soto or he just went with his gut and it told him to stick with Kershaw, whatever it did, it takes you from the greatest regular season they've ever had to an embarrassing postseason, even if it's against a very talented team with great starting pitching that they've underachieved for years in their own right. Do you think his job will be in question?
I think it'll be in question, but I don't think he's going to lose his job. I mean, he just signed an extension, I think, for 4 years. Not that the Dodgers couldn't pay him to go away. They certainly could carry that. But, you know, I would suspect, because you know how strong the analytic people are there with the Dodgers, the script going in was that Clayton Kershaw was going to piggyback on Walker Buehler. And I think it was set up, and then they could have closed the game with Kershaw if he was really good. I could easily see him going two in the third, getting 7 outs. So I think they were on board with that. I'm not sure they liked how, you know, the Joe Kelly, second inning of Joe Kelly went down. Again, I would have put Kolarik in the game at that point. But I would think he's coming back. And one more thing here, because I just get a pleasure out of watching Soto hit, first of all. He's going to turn 22 in a couple of weeks. It's crazy to think how good he is. Walker Buehler gave up one hit all year on his cutter to left-handed hitters. One hit the whole year. What does Soto do with two strikes? Gets that single on a cutter at 92 to get the first run in, which kind of broke the dam for the Nationals. I mean, it's just crazy how good this guy is. Kershaw faced him 4 times in this series. Every time he started him with a slider. What is Soto sitting on first pitch? Slider. What does he get? Slider. See you later. I mean, we're watching this kid break out like, you know, he's already been around for 10 years. It's just a complete stud. And I don't want to forget Rendon either. But when I look at this game, Doug, I know we like to assess blame, and there's enough to go around. You can pick apart Dave Roberts. You can pick apart Clayton Kershaw. I look at this as what the Nationals accomplished. I mean, this is a historic comeback for the second time in the postseason.
Okay, and then we have the Astros tonight, or this afternoon, depending on where you're watching it, against Tampa. Which would be bigger, the Nationals beating the Dodgers or the Rays taking down the Astros?
The Rays by far. This would be huge. I mean, the Rays, you're talking about the team with the lowest payroll in baseball. The Houston Astros are the first team in the history of baseball that led the league in the fewest strikeouts and they had the most walks. I mean, we know about their starting pitchers, but their offense is like historically great. And the Rays are just a scrappy little bunch when it comes to their offense. I love what they do pitching-wise, but this would be a huge upset if especially the Astros are at home for a Game 5, handing the ball to Gerrit Cole, and the Rays, after being down in the series 2-0, go through Greinke, Verlander, and Cole. I mean, this will be an all-time upset in my book.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. Sitting out there waiting is the New York Yankees. How do you think the Yankees match up with the Astros?
Man, this thing couldn't have played out any better for the Yankees, right? First of all, they draw, you know, the Twins in the first round. We know they, you know, they can play their JV team against Minnesota and beat them. And, you know, they have the days off here while the Astros are in this knockdown, drag-out five-game series where pitchers are getting pushed, the starting pitchers. So it works out perfectly for the Yankees. I think, you know, home field, as we've seen a lot of these games, you saw it again yesterday, not that big of a deal. So Houston would have it if they advance, but I just look at the Yankees right now. Now they have a settled offense, like the first time all year where they go to the ballpark and they pretty much know who's in the lineup and who's batting where. You know, that hadn't happened for 5 or 6 months. So I like the place the Yankees are in right now. I would give them an edge. I know momentum can change very quickly in a postseason series, but give me the more rested team at this point.
Okay, so this is the old would you rather, right? Would you rather lose the way the Dodgers lost, 6 outs away from going back to the DS, or would you rather lose the way would you rather lose the way the Braves lost, where the game was essentially over after the first inning?
That is a great question. I hadn't thought about that. Me, you know, I would rather lose as painful as it was the way the Dodgers did. I mean, that was just embarrassing what happened to the Braves yesterday. I mean, there were people still parking their cars and the game was over in the first inning in Atlanta. That was tough to take. And given their history, they, you know, in winter go-home games, they got home, what, 6 or 7 times in a row, if not more. That was worse to me, where you just – anytime – a game or a series like Minnesota, I thought was non-competitive. anytime a series is non-competitive in October, that's a bad thing.
Yeah, that is a bad thing. Joe Maddon to the Angels. Done deal or one of many?
Well, you know, I think Joe Perfect World probably wants the Angels, but now with Philly in the mix, you know, John Middleton, the Phillies owner, you know, I think he wants a star manager for that team. You know, he's a huge fan besides being owner of a team. They usually teams go, you know, the 180 anyway. They had a rookie manager in Gabe Kapler. I think he wants a star manager. So it's either Showalter or Maddon. You know, Maddon, of course, grew up in Hazleton, right outside of Philly. He's got the history with the Angels, all the years he spent in that organization. I think he's going to have the pick between the two of those.
Should be fun. Listen, we love your work. And obviously, I'm watching Kershaw right now out of the stretch. I thought the exact same thing when he's in the stretch. I thought it was odd with nobody on base, but I didn't know that he never pitched out of the stretch, or he didn't pitch out of the stretch last year out of the bullpen trying to close the thing up. So it's fascinating to watch the little things and to learn about the little things that went wrong last night. Really appreciate you joining us.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Are we really going to do this? Like, we're doing breakdown analysis of his first NBA preseason game? Is that what we're doing here? We haven't done it. And I guess by mentioning it, we're kind of biting the apple a little bit. But we've already gone to this thing, and look, I understand I worked at ESPN. I get that you need to promote yourself because nobody else is going to do it for you, right? Like, I know that cynics in my business are like, ESPN, they promote all their own stuff, and they're only talking NBA because they have the NBA. It's like, well, we're not going to tell you what time something's on their channel, right? Nobody else is, so you got to kind of do it. On the other hand, there does come a point where you go, are you kidding me? Right? Are you kidding me? And I heard Colin talk about Zion Williamson's preseason game last night. Like, is this what we're doing? Is this what we're doing? Like, Derrick Rose was great in the preseason game last night. He's a former MVP. He's coming off the bench, and he's playing against guys that are probably not NBA players. So let's not go crazy. Do I believe that? I believe that he's going to have a statistically very successful year? Yes. Do I think he's going to be an animal? Yes. Do I think there's things he needs to do better? Sure. Shoot the basketball. Go to his right. You know, have any sort of in between game. He didn't shoot one pull up jump shot last year. Not one. There's lots of things he's got to do better. But he's stepping onto a team that he's going to have a good role, and one which I think, because he didn't always have the ball in his hands at Duke, he'll be good in. He's 19 years old. We until ESPN spent all this money, we didn't talk about the MVP debate in the regular season. Why? Because they have all those games and they want to make you watch and bring attention to it. We didn't talk about the NBA MVP, regular season MVP, for years. Years. Let's not work to the talking about the NBA's preseason. You know, Markelle Fultz is scoring for Orlando in the preseason. Not shooting jump shots, but scoring nonetheless. Let's wait to see what happens when the regular season kicks off. I got one note for you on something Colin Kaepernick did via the internet. Plus, we'll get to the press. All the big stories of the day, including a star wide receiver on the trade block. That's next.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Did you guys see this fact sheet that Colin Kaepernick's agent put out? Jeff Nally, who says not a single team has offered Colin a job since 2016, in which he began his peaceful protest. Not a single team has brought Colin in for a workout. Seattle brought Colin in for a visit, but didn't work him out. Afterwards, Pete Carroll said Colin is a starter in this league. The funny thing about Jeff Nally saying that about Colin Kaepernick was Seattle declined getting a starter as a backup for a reason. Sure, some of it was probably Russell Wilson didn't want him in the building. But part of it is there's a different mentality of being a starter and being a backup. I also think people are gun-shy because of the Ravens deal. Ravens were going to bring him in, and then his girlfriend released the meme, put the meme out, that had the owner of the Ravens, Steve Bisciotti, out to be the slave master from Django Unchained. So, yeah, I mean, Niners aren't bringing him back. Seattle already brought him in. And the Ravens, the one place that he had Greg Roman, he had a soft landing, place that he should be a backup. He'd be a really good backup there. They took RG3, and I'm sure a big reason, and you know, the owner's not going to stand for that. So it does feel like there should be an opportunity somewhere, but you have to have a rabbi in the room. You have to have somebody who believes in you who can push you past. And the only guys that he worked with that are in the league, I believe, are all in Baltimore or with the University of Michigan. Let's get to the press.
The press.
Dan Beyer. Great job filling in yesterday.
Beyer.
We did. Thank you very much. We did. We did talk preseason hoops and how absurd NBA Twitter went over Ben Simmons' three that he made.
Well, he had never made a three before.
Yeah, I know. But there's no point in arguing with me because it was absurd, Doug. We all know it was ridiculous. It was against the whatever team, I think from China, you know, with seconds remaining. And then you saw the response. I think this could make the Sixers a legit threat to win the NBA title. Like, all right, let's just slow down a little bit. Way too much for me the other night.
Well, I would agree there. I would agree with the overstatement of this could make them a legit threat to win a title, that stuff. But he clearly needs to make jump shots to take a step in his game. Well, we agree there, right?
Oh, yes.
Correct. The problem is that you and I deal with the reality as opposed to NBA Twitter is just, it's all,
yeah.
It's like any Twitter, it's all one or something, or, you know.
And Doug, it's going to take 5 years for any team at least to be like, okay, we are going to defend Ben Simmons' jumper more than him going to the basket. Like, even if he shoots, you know, like if I took Giannis as an example. Giannis actually could shoot the three in a limited fashion. 26% three-point shooter. You will want him to shoot a three every single time he has the ball if you're the opposing defense. And so you want Ben Simmons to shoot threes every single time. So I don't think they're going to guard him any different than they would now.
I don't know if they'll. Well, let's see. I would agree right now they won't. But we'll see if they guard him in the middle of the lane the way they have been.
We'll have some NBA stuff in a sec. But first, an update on the AJ Green story that we had in Game Time. We told you that Green was prepared for anything when it comes to the trade deadline coming up on October 29th. Well, his head coach Zach Taylor told reporters today that, yeah, he's heard the speculation, but that AJ Green is not going anywhere and the team is not trading him.
Holy mackerel!
Okay, we're not going anywhere. AJ Green's like, damn.
I gotta go.
I'm stuck here.
Oh,
that's great news. I can't believe I'm stuck here.
Got some bad news for Packer fans when it comes to wide receiver Devontae Adams.
Oh. It's a major injury, so it's something that we gotta pay attention to and make sure we're monitoring the correct way to make sure it's not something that gets re-aggravated later on in the season or come back to a little too early and really mess the thing up.
Yeah, Devontae Adams' turf toe says it's not where he wants it to be right now, and you heard there, won't come back till he's fully healthy. Although they didn't need him against the Cowboys.
Yay.
Think they may need him in the future.
I think it's really interesting. A major in your toe, jamming your toe? I mean, I've heard, like, turf toe is bad, but is that what he has?
That's what they're saying it, yeah.
That is a bad injury. That's a bad injury.
Seahawks quarterback Russell Wilson says he will use Google Images again to get accustomed to a stadium he's never played in. Had never played in Heinz Field prior to week two of their win in Pittsburgh earlier this season. Also hasn't played in Cleveland, so he's checking out the images on Google Images to see what the stadium like is there to prepare for their matchup against the Browns on
Who's
Sunday.
Doing this?
Russell Wilson. The Seahawks quarterback.
How does that get you ready? I don't get
trying
like,
to get
wind?
Accustomed to the scenery where the play clocks
just,
are.
Just play Madden.
That's true. That actually would be probably the best way to go about it.
But it is true. You do get out there and you want to see where the clocks are, where everything is. They are different. It's one of the things about, you know, like Final Four. If you ever been to Final Four, it's a football stadium, and sometimes finding the clock and where you are and time and score, it can be hard to do.
Not sure I've ever seen that.
Wilson has never seen New Era Field in Buffalo. They played the Bills 8 years ago in a game in Toronto, maybe 7 years ago.
I forgot they used to play games in Toronto.
Yeah. So he has never been in that stadium or the Falcons' new stadium, but that's going to change soon.
It is what it is.
The NBA apologized today after a Houston Rockets representative blocked a political question by a CNN reporter to James Harden and Russell Westbrook. This was the exchange, Doug.
Hi, Christina McFarlane, CNN. The NBA has always been a league that prides itself on its player and its coaches being able to speak out openly about political and societal affairs. I just wonder, after the events of this week and the fallout we've seen, whether you would both feel differently about speaking out in that way in future. It's a legitimate question. This is an event that's happened this week during the NBA. This particular question has not been answered.
Any other questions?
Oh, there it is. Basketball questions only.
Basketball questions only, please.
Basketball questions only!
I do like... Here's a couple things. It's a really good thing that the PR person for the Rockets was a woman. Because otherwise, it would have been about like, oh, well, a guy asked that question. And like, no, dude, we're in China. We're their guests. We're not talking about politics. That's all they need to say. Hey, we're in China. You download my All Ball podcast. It'll drop tomorrow morning. We had Darren Revelle on. He said this was, in terms of valuation for the Rockets, that tweet could cost the Rockets, their owner, Tillman Fertitta, $300
million.
$300 million. That's a lot of cash, dude. One tweet? I mean, you should hear what I charge. That's what Colin Cowherd charges for one tweet, by the way.
Netflix is launching a new show called NBA Press Conferences, so it should be great. The drama builds. Purdue has banned students and faculty members from betting on any Boilermaker games.
They're allowed to bet on them before?
Well, they won't be.
Students? Okay.
Can't do it. Gambler.
Yeah, I'm sure that'll cut down on all the gambling that takes place at Purdue games. By the way, people are betting against Purdue.
Can't do it.
In football.
The San Diego Padres announced that Brown is back today. They'll unveil their new uniforms on November 9th. You looking forward to those?
To match with the product.
Oh. Game 5, ALDS, Rays and Astros, 7 o'clock Eastern Time on Fox Sports 1. I'll go with the Coltrane, Gerrit Cole, and the Astros.
I like Gerrit Cole. He is also a neighbor, an Orange County kid. So, and I think they're better, and I think they win. And I think it'd be terrible for ratings if they didn't. I'm going to pick Houston to win, but I will be cheering for the Rays, right? Like, if you want just the disaster of disasters for the Astros. But I think the Astros win there.
Hey, get out there and press.
That was the press.
So, look, the end-all be-all, this is the thing about baseball. It's like managing two different things. Managing the regular season, managing the postseason are completely different. Dave Roberts is a great, I think he's a very good manager. But last night he made some calculated risk decisions. But he did it based upon gut, not on calculated risk. Now, he's owned it, and that's a good thing. But last night was a win for analytics and a loss for gut guy. And frankly, a loss for baseball. The Dodgers are done. It's Doug Gottlieb Show.